The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Can you honestly tell me that you forgot? Forgot the magnetism of Robin Zander or the charisma of Rick Nielsen?
That's kid stuff.
Kid stuff? How about the tunes? I want you to want me. The dream police, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Your mama's all right, your daddy's all right, but just seem a little bit weird. Surrender.
Talk is Jericho, baby.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and in the fine Talk is Jericho tradition of having rock and roll Hall of Famers on the show. Today, we've got our first of 2017. The legendary Cheap Trick is here. Cheap Trick just inducted last year in the Hall of Fame with Steve Miller, Deep Purple, Chicago, NWA. But you're going to hear all about Cheap Trick's history. You're going to hear all about Rick Nielsen's famous five-neck guitar. He's also the guitar shaped like him, which is great. Rick's also got stories about working with John Lennon. He almost played on Double Fantasy, touring with AC/DC and Bon Scott. These are legendary rock and roll stories, people! Plus, Rick's son and Cheap Trick's new drummer, Dax Nielsen, joins in, shares some stories from his childhood, like when Guns N' Roses came to his house to drink with his dad, what it's like drumming in his dad's band, and why does he even call Rick dad anymore, all right? Cheap Trick's Rick Nielsen and Dax Nielsen are here, kicking off the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame list of shows for 2017 on Talk is Jericho. And hey, Talk is Jericho fans, if you want to be the first to know what's up with Talk is Jericho, you got to sign up at podcast1.com/Jericho. You'll never miss an episode. You'll always be in the know because we'll take care of telling you exactly when a new episode is released, who the amazing guest is, all the details, all the information, all the TIJ 411. Just go sign up now at podcast1.com/Jericho and be part of the chosen few.
Tape everything.
Yeah, I know. I should have started already.
So the day that Dax was born, I was in Montreal. We played the Montreal Forum the night before, and it was secret. But flew to New York to work with John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
So Dax is the only kid. I've got four kids, and he's the only one that I wasn't there at the hospital for.
Because you're with Lennon.
My wife gave me a hall pass to be with John.
That is kind of a hall pass, right?
And I'm not going to tell the rest of the story that I tell about right now.
But that was for the Double Fantasy record,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So you guys did play a couple tracks on that album?
Did Moving On and Losing You.
Was that through the connection of Jack Douglas?
Yep.
Who's producing the record?
Yeah.
So tell me about that experience.
What? Missing Dax being born? I got a phone call from Jack. It was actually Bunny that got the phone call from Jack, because they said they want some souped-up drums or whatever. And then they thought, well, they could use some souped-up guitar, because it was sounding a bit... don't ask me, because, you know, I didn't make the initial call. But, you know, they wanted some of the live feel that Cheap Trick had. And so the two of us flew from Montreal to New York. It was secret. We weren't supposed to tell anybody. I was like, I wanted to tell a lot of people, but you know, yeah. I'm glad I didn't, because you know, because they used us, and then we got bumped off the album because Yoko wanted to have the original guys that played on the rest of the record, because it made it too like this, and I've got a recording I can play for you in a bit. You can record it too if you want.
I love you, of the original.
No, this is even better, than more interesting than that. But walked in the studio and it was like, it was getting set up, and John came walking in and he said, "Oh, it's you." And my joke is, I think he thought I was Ozzie and Harriet, Ricky Nelson, you know.
Yeah.
But then he knew because of Jack, because Jack had produced our first record and had mixed with me and Bonnie the Live at Budokan record, which had done pretty well by
then. Right. Everyone knew about that record.
Yeah. So we were on there, and then I loaned John a guitar, and it was like guy to guy. It wasn't like, "Yes, Mr. Lennon." Mm-hmm. Bunny said that, not me. Mm-hmm. And we toasted Dax being born, and toasted Sean out too, because he was a little kid then, and I smuggled cigars from Canada into the U.S. Okay, so I should be arrested right now.
There you go. The statute of limitations has run out.
You're it okay. has? Oh, good.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so we toasted, and I hung around with John because I'm a guitar guy and a guitar collector too, and I said, "John, you know, you need better guitars than what you got here." Because he had the one guitar he had the Rickenbacker with the set list still scotch taped to the top from Shea Stadium.
Wow.
So I got to play that, and he had a Valeno guitar, which I said, you know, that's, you're John Lennon. Mm-hmm. You need something cooler. So we were gonna go guitar shopping when I came back.
Wow.
And I said, because everybody tells you yes, John. And I was like, I'd probably go, "Yes, John," every other time, because, you know, I'd tell him the truth as opposed to, you know,
when it comes to guitars.
Yeah. You know, so then we came, I had a guitar built for John and brought that back, and it was Robin and myself were going to be singing background, because we do la 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 baby voices.
Mm-hmm.
But they were finished with the album by then, so I gave him the guitar, but I had given him my one of the guitars that I brought to the session. It's a Fender Telecaster string bender, which means you can push down the thing. A lot of country guys use it, and he'd never seen one before. I said, "Well, you know, I'm going to Japan the next day." I flew home to Rockford to see my new baby. There he is, still whining.
Here I am,
still crying. He pooped his pants through the night too. I think
he went to Japan, and when he came back, but then it was 3 years later that Yoko sent me the guitar after he was murdered.
Really?
Because he had the guitar for 3 years.
The one that you had made for him?
No. The one that I had made for him is still either with Yoko or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or something.
Are you talking about the Rickenbacker?
No, not the Rickenbacker. I had a guitar made for him.
Right.
But I loaned him a guitar.
Gotcha.
I loaned him the Fender Telecaster with the string bender on it.
Right.
And I got that back 3 years later.
Wow. Took that long to go through the system, huh?
Well, you know, I never did ask for it because, you know, "Hey, man, where's my guitar?"
Right.
How do you broach that?
Yeah, exactly. But what an experience for you, though, being a huge Beatles fan.
That was the ultimate.
Right.
Like I said, part I didn't tell you, I'll tell you when the microphone is off, the rest of the story, part of it. It's all good.
The rock and roll story.
No, nobody got hurt. But then I was just in London. I went to George Martin's memorial service. I got invited, which, you know, it's like pretty cool.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, pretty horrible that he passed away.
Well, sure, but at 94, not a bad run, right?
Yeah, and so, because I'd been to his house. He'd cooked for me and my wife and stuff, and we'd known them since 1979, I think, or 78 or 79. So every year I'd get a Christmas card, and every year his handwriting got a little worse. And so I could you translate this for me? No. And then when he did the making of Sergeant Pepper, he went around the United States and did a few places like New York and Chicago and L.A. and Boston or whatever. In Chicago, he used me for his interpreter, because he's what did you say? He's more hard of hearing than I am. so I was, I'd field the questions and, you know,
tell him what was
up.
So,
you know, it's pretty cool. So then I went to the memorial service, and here I was, sitting right behind Yoko and Sean and Julian, and Sean knew about working with John, and of course Yoko did, and Julian didn't. Said he didn't know anything about it, but I thought he did, but he said he didn't. And then as right as I'm talking to them, this other guy turned around to me and says, "Hello, Rick." And I said, "Hello, Paul."
There you go.
Pretty
right?
cool, huh?
Yeah.
Actually, the guitar that he uses on stage, the left-handed Les Paul, it was actually mine before.
Really?
Yeah, I got it to him through my guy to his guy.
Isn't
years
it,
ago.
Isn't it great when, and actually you can fit in this too, when you meet somebody that was your hero and then becomes a peer and then becomes a friend? As a musician or as a fan of somebody.
Well, all he said was hello, Rick.
Well, I know.
and I never get, I'd like to get an autograph from him. I never, you know, I never asked for it. So.
Yeah, right, right. But Dax,
it is pretty cool. You know, become friends with
sure
with people, or you find out they're not jerks. You know,
right.
Like, I've met some people that I liked and or we liked, and it was like, ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great to see you. I hope to never see you again.
Yeah. How was it for you, Doc? So we were talking about this, how he missed your birth because he was hanging with John Lennon. That's probably one of the best rock and roll
I'm not too upset about
stories,
that situation.
Right? Yeah. But now you're actually in a band with your dad.
Yeah, and making up for lost time, I suppose.
Because I'm sure he was probably on the road quite a bit when you were growing up.
Yeah, we're still, Cheap Trick is still doing 160 shows a year, and they were playing double that when they were, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Yeah, in your teens or whatever.
So it's been great, and kind of the whole Beatles thing. We did Sgt. Pepper live in Vegas for 9 weeks, and Jeff Emmerich, who was the engineer for almost all the Beatles, right? He was our front of house sound man.
Wow.
So, and I had gone to England and went to George's house in the country and got his blessing to do it and got the original charts for it, for the orchestra charts. And here you go, Rick. Yeah.
Let's talk about that. How hard was it to do that? Because a lot of those songs had never been played live, obviously.
No, they never had. You know, some of the stuff that we did had never been played by the Beatles, and it was like, you know, it was edited.
Mm-hmm.
The pieces of tape were edited together. You know, we just had to learn it. You know, it wasn't like we wrote it and had to do all this stuff. So we had to learn some complicated stuff. And at the same time, it's like, We're Cheap Trick. We're not like a cover band. We cover songs, but we're not like a cover band trying to. Oh, you're gonna try and make it exactly. You're gonna make the guitar sound like Jordan. No, you know, we did it the way we did. And Jeff Emmerich commented right away. He says, you know, you guys are better than the Beatles. You do donut. And plus, you know, not better than the Beatles, but you know, we were more of a unit band playing because at that time they weren't even speaking to each other for some of the stuff. So. And you know, I didn't have to bring my wife in on a gurney.
On the hospital bed.
Oops. They're the Beatles. They can do whatever they want.
Well, sure.
They didn't care about me.
What song was the hardest to learn out of those? Because there's some pretty difficult parts in them.
I'd say Good Morning was pretty tough.
Really?
Because it's got all these weird times. It goes, there's a bar of five, and then a bar of six, and then, you know, that or Day in the Life was pretty cool. Was, you know, so many different parts.
But as an encore, we also did...
All You Need Is Love?
No, the end.
Oh.
Golden Slumbers, the backside of Abbey Road.
Slumbers.
Yeah. The whole medley?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you go online, look up, there's a mashup, McCartney and Cheap Trick doing it. And they use more of us than they do. but it's really cool. And that was difficult because that they had never played. It was pieced together. So at the end, there's a little... It's a little... The timing is like...
Mm-hmm.
Edited, not on the one or what, you know. To me, the hardest one for me to learn when we did the Sgt. Pepper was when I'm 64, because I felt like such a dork doing it.
Like a dance hall, 30s dance hall thing.
It's just because it wasn't my favorite song.
Yeah.
But I think probably the hardest one on that thing was the George Harrison song.
Within You, Without You?
Yeah, because we had to do it, and we had Indian.
Did you actually have?
Oh, yeah.
No sampling used whatsoever.
Yeah.
No, we had a four-piece Indian ensemble, and Tom played.
Wow.
Tom played and sang it.
Yeah,
because it's kind of the George thing. He's kind of the closest to George.
The whimsical.
Yeah, timing on that thing.
Really crazy. And then tabla player going nuts in the middle section.
Yeah. And that's, tabla's a crazy instrument in the first place.
Yes.
I
have no idea.
That's the thing about the Beatles that a lot of people don't know unless you're a musician is how off some of the time signatures are.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very subtle, you know, but it's like the beginning of Everybody's Got Something High But Me and My Monkey, how it kicks in.
Yeah.
It doesn't kick in on the one. It kicks in on like on the two and a half or something. It's really weird.
We just did, what's the song?
She Said, She Said.
Oh.
And that's got some funny timing in it, too. And we just did it for... Revolver 40-year anniversary for Howard Stern.
Right.
Oops, you didn't hear that.
We'll put it on after.
Produced,
it's already happened.
Produced by Jack Douglas.
Yeah, ah, Jack Douglas again.
At, at Johnny Depp's house.
With Joe, Johnny Depp's house.
With Joe Perry.
Joe Perry, who was living there, came over and played the guitar on it too. It's the end.
This thing, everybody loves Cheap Trick. I mean,
probably not everybody, but
a majority. If you take two bands that most rock fans love, it's Cheap Trick and it's AC/DC. I always hear, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of similarities between your bands, and that it's just straight ahead. You guys have got more of a power pop thing. They got more of a, I guess, more of a
more
blues
of a
thing.
Money thing.
Money of a money thing.
They get a lot more power pop money there. Nah, they're great. We toured with those guys, did flip flop shows in 78
and 79. Wow.
It was all over the place. It was with Bond and stuff. And one of the shows we did was the 4th of July. 1979 at Winnebago County or Pecatonica County Fairgrounds or Winnebago County Fairgrounds in Rockford, Illinois. It was our big home,
right, your hometown, yeah,
who to do thing. And but you know, we did a lot of shows. We did Zeppelin Platz in Germany in Nuremberg. That was like one of the biggest shows we ever did. With we did it was us and it was the Who. Then it's Bill, the Who, Cheap Trick, AC/DC, Scorpions. And
jeez,
somebody else, but they put Miriam Makeba in between Cheap Trick and the Who.
Who's that?
Yeah, there you go. Good answer.
Exactly.
Good one. Hey.
They needed a buffer.
That's exactly right.
Right.
You know, but I can't argue with that. I got a picture of that.
Of that show?
Oh, yeah, of that era and show.
What was Bon Scott like as a
guy? He was great.
Guy? Yeah.
I was the first guy to take him to eat Mexican food. And he came to my house too. This was before Dax was born. He came to my house, so did Angus and Malcolm. And when I saw him a couple years ago, Ray, is it living in Rockford, man? You know, because we were all coming up through the ranks, but it was like, so I took Von there, and he was the sweetest, nicest guy.
Yeah.
And when I took him to eat, it was like, he was the first guy that had, you know, never had tacos before, you know. He never had tacos. It's tacos and scotch. How cool is that?
Exactly the most basic mix, right?
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Dax, when you're playing with your dad, I mean, obviously, it's your dad, but is he also your boss? Do you get yelled at sometimes?
Yeah, I call him Rick. I don't think I've called him dad or daddy in 10 years now.
Right.
Just because, you know, I was a professional drummer before I got the Cheap Trick gig, so it wasn't like, okay, my dad got me a job, you know. So I was I treat him the same as I treat Robin or Tom.
Tom and Robin had to okay it before I
would. Of course, sure.
Because I didn't want to. Well, it's your kid, you know. I was like, and you know, but actually before that, like, how many years ago was this now? When Bunny broke had his operation?
It was 2001.
Oh wow!
So
okay,
15 years.
15
I've been
years
so I've been playing on and off with them for 15 years.
He played with us 15 years ago.
How old were you then?
2021.
Okay, so on an Aerosmith tour you went out.
Aerosmith tour, he went out and played because when he was got operated on. So how many months was that? I don't remember.
Like full summer, probably 3 months. Yeah. Right. 2001, and then there was a few times where Bunny had prior obligations that, so I just they flew me out.
So you're
one
just,
show
you were
here
the filling guy.
Yeah,
here,
yeah.
Whatever it was.
So I've kind of been working on the gig for.
Did you have to like audition at all for the other two guys or?
I mean. They'd all seen me play, and I had my own band that opened up for them for months.
He was a drummer for Dick Dale for 3 years.
Oh, wow, okay.
Surf guitar guy.
Yeah,
King.
Of course. Yeah. Surf guitar originator, yeah.
So sure. He was with them, and he lived. I never saw Dax for about 10 years. He lived in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to his place and saw where he lived, and I said, yay. Holy.
It's called paying dues. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I bet you a lot of people might not know that because, it's the son of Rick Nielsen.
Right, no.
Like you said, might think, I just got the gig and slid right in there.
No, I lived for 5 years in what was called the Fishbowl. I had lived with four other guys, and I couldn't afford rent, so like I literally had this small little room that was outside of the bathroom. So every morning I get to hear people taking dumps and showers and whatnot.
Nice.
Yeah. It wasn't the greatest times, but it was the greatest
man.
Times. Yeah.
So I went out to California. It's like, whoa, this is where he, you know, it's like he, obviously he wanted to be involved in music.
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, to live that way and not be a drug addict.
Right.
Was, you know, I was like, oh, if he's a drug addict, I assume it. You know? Mm-hmm. But this is like, he's not a drug addict, and he wants, you know, and he doesn't mind living like this.
Yeah.
That's you know, because you love your art or you love your craft or whatever. I mean, he was my only kid out of all four. They're all great. Of course,
I have to say that in case they listen.
I love them all the same.
But, you know, he was the only kid that was on honor rolls, mm-hmm. straight A's in high school, and then went on to college, two National Honor Societies, straight A's, and after the first year, he said, I want to be a musician.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell was I going to say?
yeah, especially you.
So I had no choice, you know, but it wasn't to be in Cheap Trick. It was, you know, to pursue what he wanted to do. So I was like, I don't support my kids monetarily, you know, but if they needed something, I was always there to help. But they knew that I, you know, I wasn't an open wallet here, whatever you want. You know?
Right.
They had to do the work. I worked as a kid. I started work when I was 8 years old. You know, I screwed around or whatever. I didn't work too hard, but you know, I preferred to work as opposed to be sitting around. I still love to work today.
Yeah, well, you guys are always working, as Dax said earlier. You guys tour all the time.
I'm not pretty like you. You know? Well, I gotta go out. I have to leave the house to get milk money.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. The Cheap Trick was always based around the concept of two good-looking guys,
right.
And two
me. Those are the two good-looking.
Yeah. Now you get
those
three
other guys.
Now you get three good-looking guys, and you're on your own.
Shut up. I don't care if you are bigger. Shut the F up. All right. There you go. Here's some old.
Okay,
pictures.
Show me some pic. Oh, look at this. You're playing on stage with Bon Scott.
No, that's Angus there.
Oh wow. Angus is on drum. No. Oh, Bunny's. Okay, there you go. That's. I thought that was Bon. Okay, so Angus is jamming with you guys on stage.
Here's a good one.
Wow.
Bon, Angus, Malcolm.
You.
That was in Germany.
What are you guys playing there? Is it an AC/DC song or a Cheap Trick song?
I'm not sure.
Wow, and look at it. It's like a stage curtain, like a silver stage curtain.
Yeah, I think this is a TV show.
Some TV show that you were jamming with them on it. Oh, that's great. And look at your full-on...
Here's is the Who Cheap Trick AC/DC. Mary McCabe.
Scorpion.
She's listed third or fourth.
Yeah. Nils, we still don't know who she is. Yeah, Nils and Zanke in band.
And this is Nuremberg, Zeppelinplatz. This place is where Hitler had his rallies.
Oh, right.
See where that swastika gets blown up?
Yeah.
That's there. There's Bond with our road crew.
He's on a bicycle.
He stole a bike from the German guy. There's Robin playing pool.
Playing pool with Bond. So you guys got along fairly well. Did some tours. And there's Brian and the guys.
And but then, you can talk about something else.
Yeah. Well, you guys, your whole history right there. Has there ever been a time, Dax, when you were playing and you screwed up? You get the look from your dad or anything like that? And you're pretty spot on.
He looks at me, too.
Yeah. You notice that he screwed up?
No, we all screw up now and again because we switch our set list every night, mm-hmm. you know, and just we'll play anything that they've ever recorded or not recorded. Mm-hmm. It's live, you know, that's the fun part about it. You know, we're not one of those bands that goes out and plays to Pro Tools or plays the same set list every night for 10 years. Like, I won't name names.
Sure,
you know,
sure. There's, yeah,
Legacy Acts. Yeah. You know, they go out and they play the hits and that's it. And they say the same thing in between songs.
So here, there's at that show.
Pete Townsend
asking me, he says, hey, Rick, how'd you get that sound on? Your guitar on the Live at Boot Hill, I Want You to Want Me. And I looked at it. I said, you're the guy that did the live at Leeds and you're asking me? So
that's a pretty cool thing, though, obviously.
Yeah,
legendary guy.
Yeah.
Was he an influence on you as well?
Oh, yeah. Townsend? Who.
Yeah.
We were Daltrey's. We were the Who, his backup band, to play stuff with him.
What, for his solo shows?
And then I did some work with Townsend again as Bob Fridden. Here's when I did the book for John Entwistle's, and here's me. That's me with him. That's me with the foreword. That's me with him at his house or his castle. And that guitar, we only made three of those, and Townsend didn't smash that one. Now it's owned by a guy in New York. I own the second one. There's only three Gilmore Travises. That's at Entwistle's place.
Because you're an avid guitar collector.
Big time.
Yeah. What's some of your prized pieces?
Well, how about there? That's a picture at my house. They only made 19 of these.
They're like
in
Gibson
58.
Gibson Explorers kind of thing.
Explorers.
Mm-hmm.
And they just sold one last week for $1.1 million.
Oof. So is that more expensive than a 59 Les Paul?
Yeah.
Really?
They only made 19 of them. They're impossible to get. I got my first one in 1976.
Was that with your Budokan royalties?
Shit, 76. Budokan royalties weren't for another 3 or 4 years.
How could you afford a guitar like that?
I traded stuff. I've always, you know, I never wanted new guitars, so I never bought new stuff. I always bought used. Mm. They were called used. They weren't called vintage.
Tell me about your guitar. That's you, the Rick Nielsen guitar. With the legs and the arms and everything.
I need all the help I can get.
Does that stay in tune, that guitar?
Are you kidding?
Yeah?
How do I know? I play my songs one song a night only.
Oh, so you use that live?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I use everything you see in those pictures. It's like, yeah, I do use them. So are you going to the show today?
Yes.
All right. So you find out.
You carry a lot of guitars with you on tour.
Oh, yeah. I think we have about 20. I have about 20.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two sets of equipment. So I have 20 and 20.
Gotcha.
And then I have at least another one or two elsewhere. Okay, I have about 500.
How did you come up with the idea of making the guitar shaped like your body, and how did that get made?
Well, actually, it was came about because of a Japanese guitar contest where the little kids were designing guitars, you know, make a guitar for Cheap Trick or Rick Nielsen or whatever. And they, you know, but a bunch of them, they're all interesting because the Japanese kids are really good artists.
Mm-hmm.
And the one had a picture kind of me, and it says, "Here's where the special toggle switch is," you know.
In the crotch area.
Yeah. And actually, the toggle switch is not there, but now I just use my finger and let everybody know where. It's not a cucumber.
Right.
It's no spandex.
Yeah, the spandex. Yeah, the cucumber and the spandex.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So there you go.
So
that was part of it. So that was one it wasn't the one that I picked for the company to make a guitar for me,
mm-hmm.
but it was one that gave me an inspiration about doing it. So then I contacted Hamer, who was at the time, I helped start that company too.
Really?
Helped start the Hamer Guitar Company.
That's a big company.
Actually,
huh?
With my firstborn son, Aaron. He was born in 73. He was born in 80. In 73, I was living in Philly. No money, no insurance, and I don't know what, but my wife got pregnant. So
yeah.
This guy named, this mailman came to Philadelphia because he'd known me about, I was a guitar collector since the 60s. You know, his hair was braided down to his ass, and he offered me money, which I desperately needed, to go back to Illinois to have a baby, you know, because the hospital and all stuff. And he gave me $2,500 for a Gibson Les Paul that I had. And his name was Paul Hamer.
Mm.
He was a mailman at the time.
No kidding.
And then he went into guitar repairing and then guitar making. And so that was the initial seed money. So I'm ready to kill my oldest son because the guitar is now worth about $400,000. So there you go. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. And I'll let you continue with the man here. All right?
Well, you come into Cheap Trick, and it's obviously Bunny Carlos's drumming is very hard-hitting. There's some great parts. What mm-hmm. were some of the hardest songs to play, to learn?
Well, not necessarily hard to learn, but definitely I wanted to do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want to be doing my own thing right off the bat.
Fit in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because people, right away, I'm Rick's kid. Mm-hmm. So either they're going to hate me or love me.
Let's go back a little bit here, too, because as growing up, I didn't know he, you know, followed Cheap Trick or knew anything about us. The stuff he wanted was Pantera, Metallica.
Yeah,
and
I was a metalhead.
And I went in and I yelled at
still
him.
Still am.
I said, one yell at him. I said, you know, go in there and for 20 minutes, don't even hit a cymbal. Don't learn all this stuff. Charlie Watts is a great example. You know, he's like, there's not
Phil,
much
Phil
going
Rudd.
On.
Phil Rudd
is my Phil favorite. Rudd. Yeah.
I said, listen
straight
to that.
Straight beat.
And then, you know, I said, then after an hour of boom, 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 then hit a cymbal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everybody wanted to learn this. You know, I learned or taught myself, you know, learning blues records, learning the basics and learning the stuff, not knowing that I'd be doing what I am today. Because mm-hmm. I started, I was a drummer. And now I can't even play the drums at all. So. But, you know, I learned rudiment drum. I never learned band stuff. But so I didn't know that he, you know, he knows all our songs. What key is that thing in? And Tom will look over. What key is that in? Where? Then the bridge part. Oh, that's F sharp. Oh, he knows it because he's classically trained on piano, not drums.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny because I heard the same thing when Wolfgang Van Halen joined Van Halen. He knew how the songs all really went.
Right.
And over years, you kind of cheat and you forget how it really goes. Like, that's not how it goes. Like, what are you talking about? I'm Eddie Van Halen. He goes, I know. And I'm your son. And I've listened to this stuff. It doesn't go that way. So, I mean, it's the same thing. You come into
pretty
the
much,
band.
Yeah,
it's fresh blood.
Like you said, I started out on piano for 12 years and then I taught myself guitar and drums. So I play guitar pretty well. So I learned all the songs just kind of doinking around.
Without me knowing. I mean, I never knew. You never came around to me. Hey, Dad, how does this go?
Yeah.
I would always help my kids only if they would try themselves first.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would help them. But otherwise, to show somebody, it's like, come on. I put in my own effort and nobody showed me what to do. If they did, or if I saw it on TV, but TV back then, they never showed any.
Right.
They showed the singer.
Right. Yeah. Always the singer.
What the guitar player's doing.
Damn singers.
Yeah, right.
So I learned Jeff Beck by listening to Jeff Beck.
Just by ear.
Yeah. And of course, my ear not being as good, so I didn't learn it very well, but that was still my favorite.
You faked your way through. So you come in?
Yeah, I at first really just wanted to do it the right way, like how, you know, what's on the album. And then these guys were like, no, do like a bunch of fills there. And I'd be like, well, that's not how it goes. Yeah, but that's how we want it to go, you know. So like over the years, it's kind of blended in more of me and the old way.
Sure.
When we'd record in the old days, it's like, you know, we never did more than two or three basic tracks. So it was like, you know, oh God, I wish he was doing this, but we were happy that Bunny wasn't in the studio to redo it. So that part that we wanted 14 years ago, now we have the chance to do it
properly. Yeah.
So the story, there you go.
Yeah, I think it's been good. The fans appreciate it, and you know, the guys are happy because we're trying new stuff with old songs, or you know what I mean.
Sure.
So it's kind of like given a new.
Do you ever run into like stalwart like Bunny Carlos fanatics?
Now and again. But you know,
you're always going to get that, right? Yeah.
No matter what I do or how good I play, they're still not going to care. Mm-hmm. You know, so it doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say 99.999% of the fans go, wow,
sure.
They're doing 2-hour sets and they're playing.
Happy that we're playing.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because we wouldn't have, you know, probably continued.
Right, right.
He was around. So it was like to do something. For the sake of doing something, screw it.
It's the same thing that Paul and Gene go through. I mean, Kiss right now, you just played with them a couple weeks ago. That lineup is a great lineup.
Yeah.
They're tight, they're solid, they can play anything. It's fun to go watch Kiss, but you'll still get people. It's like, it's not Ace Frehley, and it's not Peter. It's like, dude, shut up. Just enjoy the show, man. Come on.
Right.
You know?
Can't win them all.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't please everybody all the time, you know?
I want you to want me.
Rick, I was going to ask you about, it's interesting too, talking about Kiss, how when they did Alive, a lot of the songs were much more up-tempo, which were way better, take Rock and Roll Night. I find the same for I Want You to Want Me. The original recorded version is slow, almost like a shuffle type thing. Live, it's got so much more power, and that was the one that was always the hit.
Yeah, well, that was the live version. You know, we did that record. We had that song on our first record, but it didn't make it to the record. It was the second or the third record before it came on. And when we did the song and said, here's what I want here, we went right back on tour. While we went on tour, it got mixed and the honky-tonk piano was put on there, made it more fluffy and
wanky.
So that was not the way we originally had done it live.
So that was done when you left in post-production or whatever?
It was done, it was Jay Winding.
Oh, wow.
Who actually was, we liked Jay, but you know, he was listening to Tom Worman about how we wanted it. You know, I said, you know, that song reminds me of me sitting in a chair watching TV at my house with my, you know, the TV in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
So not much on, you know, just sitting there watching, you know, and there's a clarinet player, you know, put on my own brown shoes. I've never worn brown shoes like you.
You got red ones on right now.
Put on a brand new shirt, had that. Shine out my old brown shoes. Brown shoes just had a better flow to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I put that in. And plus, a lot of people wore brown shoes, wore like wingtips or went back in that day. So that was reminiscent of my childhood of, you know, like that kind of comfortable feeling. You know, like, okay, that's what where that came from. And then I said, I probably told Worma, I said, you know, that's that comfortable thing that I had. And so we left, went on tour, before you knew it, had a comfortable piano on there. But it wasn't a hit any place except Japan. And the reason why we did it live there was because it was a hit. You know, the Honky Tonk one was a hit in Japan. But by then, you know, the didn't I see you crying? The audience did that on their own. We
just screaming along.
That was them. And it's like now we depend on that.
It's so interesting that of all the countries to break in first, Japan was the one for Cheap Trick.
It was like landing on the moon when we got there, and because it was back then. There were no Americans there. You've been there. You wrestled there and all that kind of stuff. It was like, when we went there in 1978, the first time, it was like, you know, we're gaijing. You know?
Yeah,
we're
right, right. Foreigners.
But everybody there, it's like, you know, we really stood out. You know, people were skinny then, too, because there was no McDonald's there. You know? They got Americanized, so they look like us. They're tall and full of chemicals like us.
That's right, yeah.
So there you go. There's my story. So in 78, and, you know, when we flew over there, we actually flew coach, and I stayed in a room with Tom, and Bunny stayed with Robin. You know, we didn't even have our own rooms, you know. So we were just building up to something. And then it's like, over there, it was like they were just totally enamored with us. And so I said, this is the smartest, greatest country in the world.
Geniuses, I say.
Yeah, no kidding.
So was that originally supposed to be an album for Japan only?
Yep, Japan only.
How did it get into the States?
It was the biggest import album, I think, of all time. You know, live album of all time. And it just started to get airplay. And I think we've got Lenny Collins from Epic from Boston. Took it out, started playing it for people, and played it for people. Before you know, we just get played there, and then boom, and it went to the West Coast and Chicago. And before you know, it was like it was all over. Yep. And so people, instead of paying, you know, $15.98 or whatever it was to get an import, which you couldn't get because, you know, sell out every time you get it. You know, spending money, this is before internet, you know, all that sort of spending money to get a record by a band from the U.S. from, you know, it's like it's hard to get. You know? And so they put it out and it just
exploded.
Off.
And that's how albums would do that in the 70s. If the right DJs got a hold of it or the right groups of people heard it, suddenly it would just explode.
You were just a baby, but you probably should have had a copy.
I think I might have had one in about 81, I think is when I got hip to Cheap Trick. So when you're growing up and your dad is obviously a famous rock musician, did you understand how big of a band Cheap Trick was, or was it just
not
your dad?
Not necessarily. I mean, at the time when I was growing up, I mean, obviously I'm like 7 or 8. You know, your dad.
Yeah,
my dad's a superhero no matter what.
My dad played for the Rangers, but to me, he was just my dad.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Even though everybody else was like, "Oh my gosh, your dad plays for the Rangers," I'm like, "Yeah, like, yeah." So.
And on Wednesday, I take the garbage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I moved back, but Rick still lives in Rockford, Illinois, where you know he wasn't born there, but basically was, and I was, and. It's just a blue collar town, so if you think you're somebody special in that town, you'll probably get your ass kicked. You know, nobody cares.
Right.
He was
right.
At the grocery store, like you said, getting milk for the kids or taking the garbage out, and that's kind of how I still live. I live there again, proudly.
Right.
And but then you know, Tommy Lee, Uncle Tommy'd come over after the gig, and they'd be partying, and he'd be like, "Oh my God, your dad's the coolest. We love your dad." Or, you know, here's Slash and Axl at the house.
Now these are guys that you're into.
Yeah,
hanging out because your dad's there. Yeah. So, yeah.
And even up until now, like within the last 4 or 5 years, I've spent a lot of time with Mike McCready from Pearl Jam. Mm-hmm. He wishes he was Rick Nielsen, you know, like, but he's a much bigger.
Good to have you.
No, it's just kind of cool. So, I mean,
yeah,
it's kind of just been how it always was, but it took. I never thought of it as like.
Tell him the story, because I have to kind of tell it from hearing about it when I took you to go see.
1991, I assume. DeKalb. So I was a huge Chili Peppers fan.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the gymnasium in DeKalb, Illinois, Northern Illinois University, to go see Chili Peppers, who were headlining. And then right below them, opening up, was the Smashing Pumpkins. And below them was a band I'd never heard of called Pearl Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're hanging out, and Rick's like, my dad was like, "Hey, you want to go say hi to those guys?" And I looked over, and you know, they all had long hair and flannels on. I was like, "No, those guys look gross and smelly. You know, like now looking back, it's like, man, I could have met those guys.
Yes.
But last year I was Eddie Vedder's drummer for 3 nights in Chicago.
No kidding.
Yeah. He does a big thing with Theo Epstein from the Cubs.
Oh, okay.
It's a big fundraiser that he does called Hot Stove. And I got hired to be Eddie's drummer for
that's great.
2 nights. You know,
well, that's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
But at that same show, remember, I went in the bathroom to take a piss.
And
don't you remember what Flea said?
That you've forgotten more than I've, than he'd ever learned?
No, he said your dad was weird before it was cool to be weird.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
So that's what he said. And it's like, that I remember. I remember the other bands, but your dad was weird before it was cool to be weird. And here's Flea saying that.
Right.
Not to me. He didn't say it to me as I was in, you know, taking a piss. And, you know, it's like, I think it was the other band that said that your dad's already forgotten more than you'll ever know.
Yeah, that was the bass player for the Violent Femmes.
Yeah. But you always did have that kind of a weird gimmick in the 70s. Was that something?
I never wanted to be anybody else. I don't know that I wanted to be me. You know, I didn't. You know, I'm me. I never didn't. You know, if you think about it, all those bands, all the guys wanted to look like, you know, Keith Richards or you know whoever, Jimmy Page or whatever. It's like, you know, it's like, I love those guys, but it would be a joke for me to try to dress up, you know, like,
sure.
Act like I'm English or, you know.
Right.
Whatever. It's like, so I never wanted to be that, but, and I didn't want to be, to blend in, because I didn't blend in anyhow. You know, I was like, the guy that would get in trouble, but not big trouble. I would get in trouble, you know, like in seventh grade, when I was in the first chair. Flute and drums. See, and my dad had a music store. He was rented to everybody, every school system around. You know, all the cellos, all the violins, all the brass, all the trumpets, all this, that, the other. And I grew up. My dad was an opera singer too, so I was around music quite a bit. Not my kind of music. Mm-hmm. And so here in seventh grade, I'm getting this director telling me what to do, and it's like. I went to him one day in seventh grade. I said, Mr. Bishop, you're an incompetent, drunken fool who doesn't deserve to teach music to me or anyone else. Boom, I was thrown out of the Rockford school system music program for life.
Mm-hmm.
For
life.
Yeah, and that was it. I was never allowed back in. Not that I didn't want to be in the band.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to play in rock. Or a band. I wasn't like really a drummer then, but I just couldn't stand how we. Yeah, what I said was the exact truth. I said that was the last time I told the truth because I got in trouble
for that.
You know,
for that kind of made
I fit in. You know, and then you know years later, I said, "Oh man, Rick, you know, you remember you at school? You were always this, that, the other." You know, like, well, you don't remember me in band.
Yeah,
I wasn't there. So, but I never went to a prom. I never went to a football game unless I was playing at it.
Mm-hmm.
There were other guys that, you know, oh, I got a date with that. Okay, well, dates were good too, but you know, playing music was more important.
Right, that was more important, right?
So that's how my work ethic was more.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in school, like he got straight A's. My dad graduated college at 16.
Hmm.
So he was really smart. What he wanted to do, he was in love with my mother, and he wanted to do music. He was a choir director, so he wasn't like a rich person, but he was rich spiritually and morally. But he wanted to do that. So you know, I'm half as smart because my mom, I don't think she was that or whatever. But it was like I could have done well. When I liked teachers, I would, you know. Kiss their ass or, you know, try to do well. If I liked them, I'd do great. If the teachers were, I thought, lousy teachers or I was smarter than them, which is probably not a great thing to do, and it was always get me in trouble.
Right.
You know, I took Spanish one, twice, you know, and, you know, I didn't do.
Yeah.
But the other stuff that I wanted to do well, I could do well.
That made you an original, though, from those experiences.
Yeah, I never thought about it. You know, I didn't... You're going to be in a band when you're 70 years or 60.
Yeah.
What? Now, that wouldn't have appealed to me. I would have quit right then. You know?
Let's talk a bit about your new record before you got to go, Rick. It's
okay.
That
was 6.5 minutes. Okay, quit.
Bang, zoom, crazy, hello. I had to write down the initials because I kept getting it wrong. It's very cheap, tricky, and song title or album title.
Well, it was a song title. It started out that way.
Okay. So how was it for you to do your first record? Ah, there's the picks.
Bang. Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. Yeah. How was it to do your first record with your son, and not have Bunny Carlos with you for the first time and have your son instead?
Relief.
Really?
No, it's good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he brought, you know, he can play all kinds of stuff. You know, it's like, I didn't tell him what to play, did I? I don't think he ever.
No, no.
That's great.
I had carte blanche to do whatever I felt.
You have
like
the freedom to take the riffs. And
yeah, just... and we were kind of writing it as it was going, too. So there were no, like, this is the part that, you know, we've been playing for 15 years.
Yeah, we might suggest stuff, but it's like, there you go, make
it
crazy alone.
That was the brilliant part about doing it in the studio, kind of live-ish, you know?
Yeah, we all take, you know, hey, why don't you play something, a little higher part there? For me, oh, okay. Tom, play more stuff there. Robin, I think we should have, you know, it's like we know what we're doing, but we're not, you know, opposed to attempting stuff. So.
Changing stuff up, right?
Yeah.
It was cool, too, because we did like 3 days in Nashville in between tour dates because we were there. Like, hey, let's just, instead of going home, let's do 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that and did that again, and then we went to L.A., same kind of thing, 3 days. I think we recorded 4 or 5 times over a total of like 15 days.
Just bang it out, right?
And just had 35 songs at the end, and we had to pick 13.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
so
how it goes,
we have a whole another album ready to go, basically.
So when you're talking about realizing that your dad is, you know, this really cool guy, do you remember seeing him live for the first time? Did you go to the shows when you were a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the first time, but definitely, I mean, kind of like he was saying, or kind of like he always says, he was never going to be Joe Perry, or like, you know, Bon Jovi, these cool-looking, long-haired sex symbol guys. Like,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I looked around, like, nobody else was like him, in a way, you know, with the baseball caps, and when I was growing up, he was still wearing all the quirky sweaters and
bow ties
and pins. And
I actually used to have an outfit that was all black and white checkered.
Yeah,
and it was my Cheap Trick outfit.
Nice.
It was my Rick Nielsen outfit. I used to wear it on Raw. Actually, you could
nice.
Probably find it online.
Cool.
So I always loved that vibe that he had.
Well,
too.
It's cool that you know a musician can inspire a wrestler.
Oh yeah,
or vice versa.
Well, there's a lot of similarities between the two. For me, they're always kind of hand in hand.
Well, yeah, and it's entertainment. And
right,
it's,
sure. It's based on the live audience, based on the live reaction, the live crowd.
Yeah, because you know you do a sound check. I don't know if you guys do rehearsals or
sometimes
warm ups, but at sound check, you're not like headbanging and sweating your butt. You know, you're playing
right.
through the song to get the sound right. And,
yeah, figure it out.
But then when you get in front of people, like if you're any kind of entertainer or have any passion, you just give everything you got and you leave it all on the floor, on the stage, and then when you're done, you're exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you could have done the whole thing just sitting straight up and not moving a muscle, but
sure,
that's not what you do. That's not why you are in a big band or, you know,
yeah, sure,
have
sure.
a huge career like you had.
If you connect. So when you were watching your dad play, did you start figuring out, like, man, this guy's got some cool stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and the thing about him is that the songs are so great that he wrote, that he could have rested on that, but instead he's more known for his 25 guitars and throwing the guitar picks and being who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the songwriting is just kind of second nature. You know, it's like, but he's written some classic, you know, classic songs
that will never be forgotten.
But nobody says, "Oh, that's Rick Nielsen. He wrote 'I Want You to Want Me.'" They go,
yeah.
"Oh, that's Rick. He's the guy with the baseball cap and the five neck guitar." You know, so to have two ways to be known is pretty amazing.
Sure.
Know? So.
Tell me a little bit about the stories when you said, you know, Tommy Lee would come over, Slash or Axl.
Yeah.
Any crazy memories that you have of those, your dad's crazy friends coming over?
Well, yeah, because we have an arena that you've worked at before. It used to be called the Metro Center, but now it's called the Bank Center.
In Rockford, yeah.
It's in Rockford. And, you know, all the bands in the 80s, especially, because, you know, Rick quit drinking 20 years ago now, but back in the 80s, he was a very good drinker. Liked to host after-show parties. And so, you know, all these guys would come over, and most of them, like Guns N' Roses, they're on their first tour for Appetite. They're 21, 22 years old, but they're, you know, on the rise and invincible, you know. So Rick comes over and shows them how to drink. You know, the story goes, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, at the end of the night, it was just Rick and Slash having a drink off. And Slash tried to take his hat off, take Rick's hat off, so Rick punched him in the face, and then, you know, he got carried out to the tour bus, and they're great friends still to this day, but like, you know, partying those days,
yeah,
try your hat on, you know, that kind of thing, or the Nelson twins came over once, and they went in the bathroom with these two girls, and they were in there for a while. I think they were washing their hands for 20 sure, minutes. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Doing their hair, you know, helping each other
when
out.
When you're 7 years old, you're like, oh, what? Man, they've been, did they have tacos for dinner? They've been in the bathroom for a long time. Like, now I look back and like, oh, wow, okay, cool.
Now I get it. In Rick's house. So was there always people coming over like
kind
that?
Kind of. I mean, well, he was, Cheap Trick was always on the road, so it wasn't, you know, if he wasn't home, nobody was coming over. Mm-hmm. But if he was home, he didn't need a night off because he's at home, you know, because he's home from tour. It's,
yeah,
let's keep the train rolling,
keep the party,
you know?
Rolling. Yeah, exactly.
So, no, I, you know, I think, like, going back to Guns N' Roses, they're on their first tour. And, you know, this is before they were massive. So he was kind of like taking them under his wing in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come on over. I'll, you know, drink my beer and do my drugs and, you know,
let me show you how to
call your girlfriend long distance because you probably haven't talked to her in 4 days, you know. So, you know, for me, just, you know, kind of standing at the top of the stairs and, you know, peering your head around because you don't want them to see you. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be in bed, but
right.
You know, kind of, I learned a lot of things not to do.
Sure.
And a lot of things how to do right. You know, night.
Yeah. How do you like touring? Like being on the road as much as you are with Cheap Trick?
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it because I've always been, I had my own band for about 7 years with my brother Miles called Harmony Riley. But after 7 years, we realized we kind of plateaued and we weren't going to quote unquote make it.
Mm-hmm.
So I became, in 2004, I went out to L.A. and just became a hired gun. You know, luckily I got work. So I've been working forever, you know, 15
years. Did you play with anybody interesting out there?
Dick Dale for 3 years, the surf guitar guy. I was in a band called A Fine Frenzy with a girl. We got signed to Virgin and did a bunch of tours.
Tell me a little about Dick Dale. You're talking about, you know, Rick Nielsen playing guitar and Dick Dale playing guitar.
Yeah.
It was just all about the solo and the surf.
Yeah.
And, you know, anybody that's seen Pulp Fiction, that's his song. That's
that was
his,
yeah, that's the
Miserloo.
Miserloo, yep. I always do the analogy that Dick Dale was Poison and the Beatles were Nirvana, because Dick Dale was the biggest thing. Surf guitar, you know, the Beach Boys and Dick Dale, he had this, he was the biggest artist on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Beatles came out and he had no career. It ended his career, kind of the same with Poison.
Wow.
And Nirvana.
I see. Wow.
And so he ended up just owning a bunch of nightclubs because he had money from all that. And so he bought nightclubs down in, you know, on the beach and kind of kept that lifestyle, but he wasn't touring.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 93, I think it was, Pulp Fiction came out and totally just gave him a career
again. Back on board.
Quentin Tarantino put that as like the main entry song and it's unmistakable. And now like the Black Eyed Peas sampled it and gave, you know,
and he must be making some cash.
He does all right, you know? So that was, you know, but he was at the, when I first started playing with him, he was 69.
Mm-hmm.
I played with him till he was 72 and I saw more disgusting rock and roll sex.
Debauchery.
And, yeah, like, whoa, this guy's old and he's still doing he's still, it. So
I think he actually hit on my wife once.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Somewhere, yeah. She said, he said he was, I mean, he's Dean Dale. I was like, Dick Dale?
Dean
Dale. Dick Dale is hitting on you? I think he's got like the skulllet with the long ponytail.
Yep. Yes, sir.
But awesome. So when you're playing surf rock, I mean, because this is something that's kind of interesting to me. A very kind of short period in rock and roll history, but mm-hmm. for a while there was hundreds of surf rock bands.
Oh, yeah.
Is there, because there's like da da da, 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 is there more kind of a shuffle beat behind that?
There is a bit of that. You know, you mouthed it perfectly, so I don't need to explain it. But yeah, that's the thing. That was the style. That was, you know, it's people complain about music these days. Like once Britney Spears came out, then there was a bunch of other Britney Spearses, or Coldplay, or whatever. Everybody sounds like U2. Like, that's happened forever. Mm-hmm. You know, Dick Dale was a hit, and so the Ventures and all these other surf guitar bands. That's all so the label just pumps, gets as many of those going, trying to make money and selling records.
Right,
you know?
Right,
so
right, sure.
That was definitely a thing. And so to get to learn how to play that style, and then I played with that girl, and that was a lot of brushes and real slow melodic drumming and
mood drumming.
Yeah, so I take pride in kind of being able to do everything,
which is great. That's what you have to do.
And now with Cheap Trick, sure. I do the bunny homage, but with my own thing. You know, I play drums like Cheap Trick now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I were to play in a heavy metal band, I'd play like Vinnie
sure,
Paul.
Of course.
You know,
but let's talk about this quickly, because there's obviously some issues between Rick and Bunny and the guys, and then that's fine. But for you as a player, that's a pretty damn good drummer, Bunny Carlos. I saw him at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we were hanging out, just watching him play. It's like, wow,
yeah,
he's really good.
He's got his own style too. Like, there's he's left-handed, but he plays right-handed.
Hmm.
So he kind of, it's almost as if his left hand, which hits the snare drum, it's kind of like a normal person's right hand would be on the hi-hat. So he's got this. It's a riding instead of yeah. just with the twos and fours.
Right.
And so not a lot of people, I grew up kind of watching that, so I'm able to do that with my left hand, which a lot of drummers cannot do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just it's just their brain isn't wired that way.
Sure.
So what for better or worse, you know, I can do that.
Right, right, which is great. And then add your own
which,
flair
which
to
is their
well.
Sound, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so, the thing. It's the Cheap Trick sound.
It wouldn't be the same without that signature
yeah.
sound. Fact, you know, Tom plays the 12-string bass and Bunny had the left-handed riding
that's
snare
interesting.
Drum. So
what have you learned from touring with Cheap Trick, like from your dad, not from a fatherly aspect sort mm-hmm. of thing, as a working, very successful rock and roll band for 40 years?
Right. I don't know if I learned it, but it definitely reaffirmed just that every show matters. Don't ever go out there and, you know, you're tired, you know, and you don't give it your all. Just, you know, I've never seen those guys ever phone it in.
Hmm.
In my 36 years of life watching the band and now playing with them for 7.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the audience paid money to see you play, so I don't care if you're sick. I don't care if your butt hurts. You know, mm-hmm. Like, get out there and do it and go back to the hotel and rest. And, you know, we do a meet and greet every night, too. And you're tired and you don't want to shake some stranger's hand or 50 of them. But that 10 seconds of life or 10 seconds of an encounter, yeah. like they'll remember that the rest of their life. So, you know, it's little things like just don't be over yourself, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah get over yourself. Yeah,
get over yourself and just, you know, you're making somebody's day, even though it seems silly to you. Like go out there and play as well as you can every time and be nice. And
Ronnie James Dio told that to me years ago, is give everybody their moment.
Yeah.
Like he said exactly what you said. You'll never remember it, but
right.
they'll never forget.
If you're a jerk, they'll tell everybody they know.
Yeah, and they'll always remember that that you, you know, hurt their feelings. Like Rick was saying earlier about how some guys you meet, you're just like, you wish you hadn't met them.
Yep.
You don't ever want that to be that way.
No.
And sometimes it's, you know, but if you're in a bad mood or in an airport, but when you're in that public forum where people are coming to see you and meet you, you owe it to them to smile. I don't care how shitty of a day you're having, right?
That's how I make my living. That's how you make your living.
Yeah.
Because of those people.
How is it for you right now, Cheap Trick, the perennial, the most famous opening band in history?
Yeah.
And now you're touring with Joan Jett and Hart. How's the tour?
It's been great because all three bands are now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's called the Rock Hall 3 for All because they needed a title.
Of course.
But to put a selling
t-shirt.
Point, yeah. But, you know, we each get an hour. For each band only to play an hour, you get to play every song
that's,
that everybody wants to hear.
That's
plus
12, 13
extras.
Songs, man. Yeah.
At least. So, I mean, you play all the hits and the crowd gets everything they want to get from that ticket. And it's, so that's been really great. And everybody has been around for 35 plus years.
Sure.
So,
do you have interactions with any of the other bands?
All day. Yeah. Every day. It's been one of the better tours I've ever been on.
Mm-hmm.
Just with people, because, you know, Cheap Trick and Joan Jett used to gig together all the time, you know, like when she was 15 years old.
Wow.
You know, so she still looks up to them as like brothers kind of thing. And same with, you know, vice versa. And everybody gets along great. And, you know, everybody except for Cheap Trick, excluding me, but Hart and Joan Jett, it's all new guys in the bands, you know.
Sure, yeah.
So younger guys or girls.
So you got some people to hang out with that aren't
in their 60s. So I've made some good connections. And Dan Rothschild is the bass player for Hart. He was one of my good friends when I lived in L.A.
Okay.
So I like to actually tour together now is great. You know,
touring arenas and amphitheaters
together. We're making memories.
You made it. Yeah,
so we're kind of looking at each other like, wow, we're playing for 20,000 people a night, every night, for 3 months straight.
So what do you do now, Dax? Like you said, we were talking before this, Cheap Trick, Rick is 67. The Stones are still playing at 72, 73. You got this really big gig. What do you do, though, kind of in the back of your head, knowing that like 10 years from now, you still want to be playing rock and roll?
Yeah.
Cheap Trick might not be, or probably won't be.
Well, you never know. Who would have thought they'd still be going at Rick is 68
sure,
years old?
Sure.
I have a studio at my house, and these days, if you have music, you could Dropbox it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll record drums over your guitar parts and send it back to you. And, you know, so
yeah, sure.
I'm kind of trying to make sure that people know that I'm a gun for hire in the studio and you don't have to fly me out and put me up and, you know, I'll do it at my house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is, it's an easier way for people to make their dreams come true these days. Like, cause back in the day you'd have to rent a studio and a producer. Now you just email it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do all the drums and send it back and you can work on
it. Edit it out.
At your own time.
Put the samples on.
Yeah. So I do that. And like I said, I did like the Eddie Vedder gig last year. So I'm just trying to play as much as possible.
How'd you like playing with Eddie?
Amazing.
Because he's very much off the cuff, too, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam.
I mean, they gave me a list of like 12 songs to learn. Luckily, I'm a Pearl Jam fan. We ended up playing for 2.5 hours that night. Like, that's a lot more than 12 songs.
He's just calling stuff.
He was calling Corduroy or, you know, calling out Rockin' in the Free World. It's like, okay, I know it.
Yeah.
Enough.
And
it was, it was for charity, so it wasn't like.
But once you're a pro, you can fake your way through the parts
you don't
know.
I've been playing in clubs since I was 17 years old,
right.
15, 16, 17. So I've done most of those songs in my own bands or whatever, and a Pearl Jam fan. So, or just wing it. If you're not playing the right part, maybe it's better than what he had originally, you know? So
it's all about confidence.
Yeah. Right? Just go with it.
Exactly. Last question for you, Rick, before you have to go. What's your favorite song on the record? On the record, what's your favorite song to play live?
Ooh.
It's hard, right? They're like your kids.
I love them all. I don't know. You know, they're fun to play. The intro song.
Hard on the Line.
Hard on the Line is cool. Mm-hmm. It's a pop song. I don't know, but then there's Long Time No See You. That's a song. That was actually the Bang Zoom Crazy Hello original thing.
It's a great tune.
But then it was like, we get to the part, it's a part about addictions and drinking and drugging and, you know, all that stuff. Long time no see you. Boy, I missed you. You know, I really missed you. Then I have another. Long time. You know, it's like it's reintroducing yourself to a vice or whatever. Mm-hmm. Could be a good vice, too. So
sure.
It's like, hey, boy, I missed working out.
Yeah.
Then I tried another. All right. Long time no see you. Boy. You know, if you put it like it's like, he's got to have at least double or triple entendre.
To keep some layers
to it. Attention, let alone anybody else's. I know what that song means. Oh, really? Tell me. You know, it might be a better idea than what I had. There you go.
How about your favorite song to play live?
Well, when I drank a lot, it was Good Night.
The last song of the set.
Because I didn't drink when I played.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know. You know, I have fun playing lots of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's good things about almost every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
We do stuff that's like, we do a song, Lookout, which is like basically only on the live Budokan record. It's like,
yeah.
It's got a cool middle part to it. And every musician that we ever meet, they'll say, God, I want that part. I really like that. But at Dream Police, that middle part, how's that go? I don't care how good they are. Every one of them has trouble with it. Now I think of it as like, just do it. But it's got weird timing in there too. So it's like, until you actually show it, that's how that is. Mm-hmm. You know, so I got to, you know, that's kind of fun to do because it's still kind of goofy and goony, and we do a Wiedersehen sometimes. And there's a great song that nobody really had ever heard, Borderline, that we had on a record. It doesn't sound as good on the record as it does live now. I mean, now it's just like, I wrote it, but it's like, you know, God, I wish I would have been smarter then.
It's fun to rediscover some of those old gems and rework them.
But there's lots of stuff. I mean, Robin's got good stuff. We, you know, all together, we got a lot of fun stuff. And then when we start playing these different sets every night, it's like, God, like we did Clock Strikes 10. I mean, geez, no wonder that was number one in Japan.
Was it really?
Yeah, nowhere else in the world.
It's random, yeah.
Yeah, and that was like, so that was early on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stupid. Dee, 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 dee. It's every note down. Dee, dee. It started on an A. A, D, flat, D. A, D, 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 D. You know, I really thought that one out. I did, because you have to count what, you know.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
There you go.
Oh, man. Last question for you. What's your favorite song on the new record? And what's your favorite song to play live?
Cheap Trick.
Being your first record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, Hard on the Line is the first track.
That's
it's
a great tune,
just a rocker, and it comes
out.
It's
a classic Cheap Trick.
It is. And then we did a track called When I Wake Up Tomorrow, which is the third track, and it's slow, kind of Bowie-esque. You know, Robin sings real, kind of like David Bowie versus like screaming Robin Zander, and Robin can sing anything. But like that was it was kind of like, we don't have to record the same Cheap Trick song over again. Like, let's go somewhere else. And and that was the first single, and it was number one on radio, you know, not only like adult contemporary. It was in rock radio.
Rock radio. That's great.
So, like, for me, and that was a part I came up with, and we you know, it was our creation.
Yeah.
And to hear that on the radio for the first time was like, whoa, you know, this is great. But, I mean, it's cliche, but they're all, I love them all, and except for one. But, we won't. But, you know, every song's a little different. And there's a song called Blood Red Lips, which is kind of got the Southern Girls vibe, Cheap Trick.
It's a fun one, yeah.
You know, so every song's a bit different. I got a drum solo in Sun Never Sets.
Ah.
So it's later in the album, so people probably haven't heard it.
That's why it's later in the album.
Yeah, drum solo. Don't want to open up with that one.
How about your favorite song to play live with Cheap Trick?
I love to play Top of the World.
Off
of Heaven Tonight, and Gonna Raise Hell is one of the, it's a 12-minute song.
Do you guys play that lots live?
we do on our own shows, but we have an hour. That's a 12-minute because there's a drum solo in that one as well, and then like a bass thing in the middle. And
we use that in between sets when I play with Fozzy. Cool. We put Gonna Raise Hell on before we go on. It's just a great tune.
Yeah, so that one's great. L.O. Kitties or Big Eyes, they're all different.
They're all fun, though.
And the same time, like you play every night, it's the same songs or whatever. Every night when you play I Want You to Want Me, the crowd stands up, whether they're sitting down or whatever. Everybody in the audience gets up and like pulls out their phone or sings along. And I don't care if you played it 1,000 times.
And the fun thing about
every night's different. It's fun.
It starts with a drum intro. Too. It's a very it's almost like a Trot for Teacher or a Run to the Hills where it's got that drum beat where you know it right away what it is.
That it's a signature lick. So. Yeah. You know, I every song's fun, and I'm playing drums for a living, so every song, no matter what, is going to be great. My favorite song.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you, Rick.
Good night, Dex.
Well, dude, it's great to see you. We met at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think I was pretty loaded, but it was good. We get the chance to hang out. You brokered having Rick come down, and so I appreciate it, man. I'm looking forward to seeing
you. You called me and my buddy Ben a stupid idiot that night, and it made my week.
only I could call someone a stupid idiot, and it's a good thing.
And they go, yeah, thanks, thanks.
Thank you, Tokyo! Chief Rick says good night!
Thanks to Rick Nielsen and Dax Nielsen of Cheap Trick. Great stories, father and son. And what a great show, too. We did this interview the night I went to see them where they were touring with Hart and Joan Jett, and they did play Gonna Raise Hell just for me. I love it. They don't stop either. They got a couple live dates this month. They got the 80s cruise in February, then a full winter tour kicking off from February 24th in Indio, California. Follow them on Twitter at Cheap Trick and Facebook at Cheap Trick. All right. And thanks to you for listening. Thanks to all you listeners for supporting the Great Jericho Network shows on Podcast One, including the newest entry Beyond the Darkness. We've got another hit in our hands with this one, Runaway Hit. It's getting great numbers and ratings. Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis doing a tremendous job of scaring the crap out of you. The first three episodes are all about the Black Eyed Kids and the Shadow People. These guys are the best in the world at what they do. I know you guys love my paranormal shows. They always do great ratings. So now I'm giving you a weekly paranormal show, Beyond the Darkness, exclusively on the Jericho Network. So go hit the subscribe button at iTunes for Beyond the Darkness and all the other TGN shows, including Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus every Tuesday, Keeping It 100 with Conan on Thursdays, and of course the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday. Lots of entertainment for you all week long. All week long! And hey, let me say thanks to all of you for doing all your shopping through the Talk is Jericho Amazon links. Easiest way to support the show, I use the Talk is Jericho links when I shop on Amazon, and guess what? Amazon makes it so easy and hassle-free, man. You can find my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, and then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got the Amazon links for the USA, UK, Canada, every time you use that Amazon link, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to Talk is Jericho to help us cover production costs. You can buy just about anything you think of on Amazon, and there's no extra fees or hidden challenges. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button, okay? You can also find all my other great sponsors there. Good stuff, and don't forget, too, more good stuff, March 15th, 2017, the biggest podcast ever. When Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho, the countdown rolls on, 66 days until Mick makes his TIJ debut. You're going to be listening. It's going to be great. I thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And on Wednesday, he is the highest-selling, greatest saxophone player of all time. I'm talking about Kenny G. Yeah, you heard me right. Kenny G. You might be wondering, what the hell is Kenny G doing on Talk is Jericho? He was a tremendous guest. Wait till you hear this one. It'll be one of your favorite episodes by the time you finish. Kenny G, the greatest saxophone player of all time and huge in China as well. He's the guy with the curly hair and the curly sax leads, and he's going to be here next Wednesday. We will see you then. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy, Kenny G.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.